had a really good talk with Dean Stowe last week. It's interesting. It's a very powerful topic. It affects college, elementary school, high school, junior high school. It's going to affect our society hugely in the next 20 years.
I don't want to share someone else's thoughts. I want to create my own original thoughts. I want to create my own original solutions. I want to look at situations and come up with my own phrasing, my own words, and do it my way.
This is the John Taffer Podcast.
Shut it down.
Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome. I'm John Taffer. This is my John Taffer Podcast, and it's another week in paradise. Last week, we had a great talk with Stowe Shoemaker, who's the dean of UNLV, James Harris School of Hospitality, which is the number one ranked hospitality university in the country.
Yep.
And, of course, my local university, and I have a very close relationship with UNLV and Dean. And it was a really fascinating talk about where the industry is going and how education is changing to accommodate it. And, Corey, so much about technologies.
Right, yeah.
And how technology plays not only such a large part in teaching, but how it plays such a large part in the restaurant industry now. And I certainly have learned that with Taffer's Tavern. So this week we're going to take your calls. And I wanted to see what you guys sort of think about where this is going. But there's a couple of things I want to talk about before we get there for today. You know, I got a chance to. I don't want to get too political. You know, I don't try to get too political on this podcast. But you know what sort of bothers me is that from citizens, we've become targets. So think about this, Corey. Last week, one of the parties, I won't even mention with because it doesn't matter, because one party's last week, yeah, next party's this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was all about analyzing you demographically, saying the words that move this group of voters than that group of voters, understanding what to say at this time versus that time. And, you know, if they were out on the road campaigning, they'd be having one conversation in Florida with a Cuban audience, they'd having another conversation in New York with another audience. And you know, everything is so targeted today. And I'm going to tell a story that I've never told before. It's not public, but I'm going to tell it. About a year ago, maybe it was 8 months ago, I was asked to run for Congress.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And you remember this, Corey. I went to Washington. And I thought to myself, you know, this maybe I could make a difference from the inside out. Because I don't fit under any traditional party envelope.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a little more socially liberal.
Yeah, just listen to one episode of the podcast. Yeah.
I guess you know that, right? I'm a little socially liberal, but I'm very fiscally responsible. And, of course, those two things slap each other in the face sometimes. But the reality is I can't spend what I don't have. So, you know, I look at this in a responsible kind of way. But you know, it sort of bothers me. When I was younger, speeches were sort of national. They spoke to everyone, Corey. They didn't just speak to one group. You know, and I just find it so scientific. So I'm asked to run for Congress. I said, well, I'm going to think about it. And a dear friend of mine says, John, I'll be a campaign a finance director for you. I'll make sure you get all the money that you need to run for a campaign. And I was told that a campaign in the district that I was considering running in would be about $4.5 million. So I'd have to raise $4.5 million to be able to do this. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I can make a difference. So I investigated. I go to Washington. And I go to Washington for a couple of days. I meet with a lot of people. Of course, I won't mention names. I meet with some leaders, some congressmen, some senators, some wonderful people. And I met with some people on both sides, but some wonderful people who were there because they really care. And they really cared about bringing new people into the fold. And that's why they were talking to me. And then one day I spent with the campaign marketing companies.
Mm.
So they had a day meeting other congressmen and senators to sort of talk about how they handle their businesses and such. And then I met with the campaign people. So I met with the marketing managers, the messaging people, the media buyers, and all of those people. And they sat down at the table and they showed me the demographic studies that they've done for this person and that person and how they changed this message and that person won, but it wasn't the original message that he had. Maybe it wasn't even what he believed, but it was changed and he won. And I realize that, you know, I talk about bar science all the time. This is political fucking science.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they are analyzing so much. And as a result, they say what we want to hear much more than what they believe. And that scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And when you really think about it, Corey, you know, if I don't know what you believe, how can I anticipate what you're going to do?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not driven by beliefs, then what are you driven by? Money? Payoffs? Buy-offs? Fame? Ego? If you're not driven by one, you have to be driven by all the others. And it really concerns me. So I, of course, chose not to run because here I am. And that doesn't mean I won't in the future, Corey. And I'm considering something else, another office.
It's not that way.
It's just not that way. And I found that the real problem with it was for me to do it, I'd have to make hundreds of phone calls and just ask everybody I know for money. $25, $50, $100. And I would spend the next year of my life raising money, calling my friends to ask for money. And the whole process of asking for money was really bothersome to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not the kind of person to call you up, Corey, and say, listen, give me some money.
Right.
You know, donate to my campaign. I'm the guy who's going to change your world.
Yeah.
Give your money to me. I had a real hard time saying that. Now, I'm on the board of some charities. I have no problem asking for money for them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was different. And it made me a little uncomfortable. And I realized that there's some people in life who are comfortable taking your money, and then there's other people in life who aren't. And I guess I'm one of those who aren't. And it was a fascinating process to go through and realize the amount of analytics and how much the message is honed and the TV spots are honed and how little of it in the end is driven by the candidate's personality or driven by the candidate's ideals as compared to the data and the purpose that they identify. So, you know, that's sort of what's going on. And I watched last week with one party, you know, all the structured speeches and the things that they're saying and the things that they're avoiding. And I see a candidate on one side of the aisle, on one side of the party, Corey, and I'm going to say this, I'm going to get beat up like this today. One of our presidential candidates today is sitting in a basement doing no media activity at all. Now, think about that for a second. Hundreds, if not thousands, of media companies have asked this man for an interview. Thousands want to talk to him today. They'll send crews. They'll do remotes. They'll do it on Skype. They'll do it on Zoom. They'll do it on the phone. Radio stations will do it all day long. He has, I'm sure, hundreds, if not thousands, of interview requests. And what this man did, who's running for president today, is chose to say no to all of them. That bothers me. Not who he is, not what he stands for. That's not where I'm going here. It bothers me that somebody who's running for the highest office in the country is not seizing the opportunity to talk to the media, that doesn't see that as a responsibility to engage every day, to let us know him, let us know his beliefs, ask questions, get questions answered. That should be our right as a voter, and that should be the responsibility of any candidate. And I'm putting politics aside when I say this. No presidential candidate should be permitted to avoid the media to this degree. It makes me wonder, when somebody avoids something, what the hell are they avoiding? It makes me scratch my head, Corey, you know?
Right, like you're hiding, yeah.
What are you scared of? What are we avoiding? So all of these thoughts go through my mind that are negative because this man isn't talking. And it scares me to think that we would have a president, I'm going to say it, who's hiding in a basement rather than embracing the thousands of media requests around him. Now, I can beat up the other side too. On the other side, we have a president who talks too much, maybe doesn't say the truth all the time, maybe manipulates the media in those kind of ways. I'm not being political here. I'm trying to be factual. So put the politics out of it for a moment. And I ask you this question. Does it bother you that a man who's running for president of the United States has thousands of media requests and chooses to do none of them? Does that bother you at all? Do you think that's right? Do you think that's the kind of relationship that any politician should have with their constituency? I wonder. And I didn't want to be political today. Sometimes I can't help myself, Corey. But it's just interesting to me when I try to take issues out of it. And I try to say, no, I'm not thinking left. I'm not thinking right. I'm just looking at something that bothers me. And any candidate who did this, it would fucking bother me. So, you know, I plead to open this up to the media. I plead for interviews, for discussions, for dialogue. This is a very important time. And I think all of us should demand it. All of us should demand that the candidates who are running for president of the United States have accessibility by the media, that questions are asked so they can be answered, that they're not shielded from questions and answers, that that, in essence, invades our ability to make decisions properly and to know who the heck we're voting for. And I say that in a completely non-political way. It just bothers the fuck out of me.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't even think about it that way.
Yeah, and if you put politics out of it, it stinks. There's something not right about
that. Like what
are you hiding from?
Yeah.
You know, other presidents, other candidates would seize these opportunities. Right. Yeah. They'd be doing every interview they can. They want to get their message out. They want this, they want that. Mm-hmm. But no, not this time. And it bothers me. So you know, I just want to see that change. I want to see those interviews, those questions, those answers. I want to see this happen so we Americans can have some type of a dialogue with the man who's trying to run for president of the United States. We know what we got on one side. I'd like to know what we got on the other side. Wouldn't you, Corey?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then you can make a decision.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't think either side should be hiding. No. So what about schools going back?
Yeah, I think all the schools are pretty much started up now.
Yeah. So some of them were having big problems with, others were not. But it's to be expected. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wonder how history is going to look back at this when you really think about it. You know, they all talk about the pandemic of 1918, and they talk about this, and they talk about this, and smallpox, and all of these tuberculosis, and all of these other medical crises that we've gone through. And, you know, history looks at things a little differently. I wonder how history looks at this. I wonder if we'll ever know if the lockdown was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. I wonder.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You do a lockdown, but then you undo it, and the effects of having a lockdown goes away pretty quickly when everybody starts hanging out with each mm-hmm. other.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wonder if history would be kind to the way we as a society have treated this. I wonder if history would be kind to you in the way you've treated this. You know, I look at you, Corey, and you know, you're young. Just 25, right?
Just right, 25. Yeah. Just turned.
You know, you're wearing a mask. I know your friends are. You've looked at this mm-hmm. pretty responsibly, you know.
Absolutely,
And, you know, you look at it seriously. And, you know, I'm guessing that history would look at the way you acted as responsible.
Sure.
History is going to judge us as a society in the way we have dealt with this. And it's interesting to see where that lands. You know, I often wonder. But there's many bad things going on that concern me, and one of them is education. And I want to talk about that for a moment. I want to talk about distancing for a moment. You know, I did a podcast, several months ago on Zuckerberg's podcast.
Oh, okay.
Before my interview, I was listening to the interview before me. And I'm sitting and I'm wearing my headphones and I'm next. And as often happens, I'm listening to my interview. And the person before me was talking about how the technology industry has gotten so excited about distant learning, how they've gotten so excited about virtual trade shows and virtual retail, and how excited they are about, in essence, destroying the businesses of the others. And it was interesting because I listened to this interview, and this digital person, this digital thought leader,
mm-hmm.
was incredibly excited at the opportunities in a digital world to reinvent education, to reinvent college education, reinvent retail experiences, create virtual everything, in essence, Corey. But by doing that, they're disrupting every other business, and there was no sensitivity for that, no thought about mm-hmm. that at all. And as I watched this interview, listened to this interview, at the end of the interview, it was like jubilant. Oh, man, they were so freaking excited about this. And then it came time for my interview, and I was supposed to talk about the bar space and what was going on in the bar industry. And the first thing I remember saying was, you know, before I even talk about my industry, I just got to tell you, you know, the conversation that I just heard was horrifying. And they were talking about how, well, parents can monitor children's screen time. Can you imagine that, Corey? You're 10, 12, 13 years old, and your parents require that you get your 6 hours of screen time every day, and that this app is going to track your screen time
mm-hmm.
and track your key punches and monitor if you're doing your job. And I guess your parents are going to receive a management report at the end of the week that'll say, Corey spent this amount of hours on his computer, and he spent this amount of time on this page and that amount of time on that page, and blah, blah, blah. So we are now going to be managing our children's education through a freaking management report delivered on our phone on a dashboard for home learning.
Yeah.
Fuck. I just,
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
I mean, we think that's crazy because we didn't grow up that way. Now these kids are going to grow up and they're going to, you know, it's going to be normal.
But you know, when I watch
being tracked and all this stuff.
But it's when I watch futuristic movies, Corey, remember everybody's in their home and everybody's wearing gray and it's like nobody knows each other in some of these futuristic movies, right? And the world is sterile and personalities are gone and opinions are gone. And we're all just sort of functioning machines, right, in these worlds. And there's a bunch of futuristic movies that I can think of like that. I think that's what happens when kids are not ever allowed to be in groups like this.
Right, yeah.
And I really worry about it. And you know, when this individual said, well, we'll monitor screen time, I thought to myself, who's going to monitor playtime?
Right, yeah.
Who's going to monitor time that you sit down during lunch? Remember lunch in the cafeteria? Hanging with your buds at lunch in school and how much that meant to me?
Oh, yeah.
And recess?
It was an escape.
Absolutely. You know? And, you know, my school, they used to let us sit outside in the grass in this area called the hill.
Okay.
And we could all sit out there together on the hill. And you know, those were the moments. School wasn't just about education. So my point is this. And, you know, I learned this talking with Stowe last week, and I really want to hear your opinions on this. Should we just secede? Should we just give up and say, okay, we're going to go with distance learning, that's it? Or do we fight for this and say no? Distance learning is not the way our society should go. Let's fight harder. Let's figure out after vaccines how we get away from distance learning. Let's not allow technology to take over where human interaction led. And what do we as a society do? Do we allow the next phase to take over, or do we hold our ground on the values and the approach that we've had our whole lives? It's an interesting moment in time, and it's just one facet of this. But this is what's going on in our society right now as a whole. We have a choice. We can either walk into the door of the unknown, virtual education, right? A global mentality of the world, right? Different healthcare structures, different this, different that. Reinvent America. Redefine everything. Redistribute. Redefine. Reinvent. Do we want to walk into that door, or do we want to sort of stay in the door we're in a little bit and maybe walk in the door of innovation a little slower? And to me, I'm a little scared, Corey, when I see education moving this quickly in such an extreme way, so being in class to none of it,
right?
That scares me.
Yeah.
And I just think as a society, we need to think about this moment in time and think about where do we want to go? Are we prepared to let this wave just take over and allow everything to become digital and isolated? Or do we want to hold our ground on some of these things? This relates to the way you live your life. It relates to the choices that you're going to make. It relates to what you do on election day. All of this matters. So do we embrace and rebuild what we have and fight for it, or do we throw it away and start over again? I don't know, Corey. I sort of like a lot of what we got, don't you?
Yeah, especially when it comes to schooling.
Yep. Absolutely. Schooling, educational programs. I agree with you. You know, there's so many good things about what we do. And sure, there's a lot of things we can change too.
Of course, yeah.
I just don't want to lose the good. You know, as they say, don't throw away the bathwater with the baby, as they say, or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
It was something like that, but we'll figure that out when I come back.
Okay.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
All right, I'm back. So I got it backwards. You don't throw out the bathwater. I got it backwards. Don't throw out the baby when you throw out the bathwater.
There, yeah.
All right, that's something like that. I know you don't want to throw out the baby. The bathwater you want to throw out, but you definitely don't want to throw out the baby. You know, I posted this week, and I wanted to hear from you guys. I want to hear what you think. You know, I had a really good talk with Dean Stowe last week. It's interesting. It's a very powerful topic. It affects college, elementary school, high school, junior high school. It's going to affect our society hugely in the next 20 years. So, you know, I was curious to hear what you guys think about it. So, Corey, let's open up some audience calls.
Audience calls.
Okay, that was fucking impressive.
You like that?
I like that. So that was a new one. So I like the voiceover. Audience calls.
Yeah.
Very nice. I'm feeling like I should say the news and weather right now. What do you think?
I know, right? It's a good...
11:05. 95 is open right now. There's a one-hour delay on Interstate 405. And news at 11.
All right, let's get into these calls. So first up, we have David from Tennessee.
Hello?
David, John Taffer here.
Hello, Mr. Taffer. Great to be speaking with you, sir.
Thank you, buddy. So you're in Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
Your university.
Big orange country.
So I'm guessing there's some orange clothing in your house down there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I'm wearing the Power T right now.
Awesome, buddy. Well, you know, you go to a great university with an incredibly rich history. You know, and
yeah, love the history down there.
And it's a big university and an influential university. And it's interesting because we were talking on a podcast, David, about, you know, distance learning. And the impact of socialization and, you know, even personal growth and development and all of this. And you're sort of struggling this with yourself right now, aren't you?
Yeah. It's everything kind of self-collapsed in on itself. That's basically what happened with everything stopping just so abruptly.
So what are you doing? So you're not on campus now, so you're home?
Yeah, but I live in town. Gotcha. So I'm local to the area. I actually went to high school at the L&N train station downtown Knoxville, right next to the university. So I'm very familiar with the place.
So do you have classes you can go to, or are you all distanced right now?
I actually had one class that gave me the option of going to campus.
Yeah.
And I have one class where I have to physically draw stuff for my advertising course, and I have to physically go to campus and turn it in.
And interesting.
It's a very interesting way to do things.
So talk to me about the distance learning for a moment. So what are you looking at? Is the teacher giving you a lecture online? Is it replicating a classroom environment? Is it worksheets? Is it like outlines on paper? Share with us what your online learning experience has been like.
Well, my online experience has been mostly you have classes that are synchronous, that follow like an actual college schedule of time, and when you have to go, like I have to go in. Like today, I went in at 1:10 at my time, and I went in for psychology. And then I had to wait until 4:30 to go to a class virtually again.
Gotcha. So
for my advertising research.
So you're not doing
that's
these,
example today.
So you're not doing the classes then when you choose to. There is a schedule. So when you looked at the
Some of them are. So, are that way, though.
So when you look at the screen, David, and let's say your psychology class, was it a professor talking to you?
Yes.
Okay.
And they share their computer screen, and basically if they had a PowerPoint that they would have shown in class, it's basically virtually the same.
Gotcha. So they're replicating the classroom environment. And can you ask questions by comments? Is that how you do it?
We actually do it by actual voice. And some people try to do it by comment, but they normally don't do it by comment. Everybody's still getting used to it, though, but it's very interesting.
Yeah. Are there more students online now than there would have been in a classroom? Or you think those ratios are about the same?
I actually think that they actually went up. I think they went up because I was looking at some stuff in my personal, through my Canvas and stuff, and one of my teachers actually said this out loud to everybody because we had to take our course from synchronous to asynchronous. And she said, we have over 1,000 people taking this course.
Wow.
And it's pretty crazy that even like in one section, it has over 500 people, and that's just accounting.
Wow. So if you had a question, there's not a great likelihood you're going to get it in within that session.
Yeah. Like, for example, today, the teacher sent a mass email saying that, you didn't do this assignment, but apparently her inbox literally got flooded with thousands of emails today.
Wow.
Because of it.
And how's she going to answer them
even
all?
She's had to make a mass Canvas thing saying, I screwed up.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. So I think we're at a really powerful turning point in our society right now. And I think one or two things can happen, Dave. And I'm curious to hear your opinion because you're living this right now. One of two things can happen. As a society, we can say, okay, let's let digital and distance learning take over. Let's let these programs get developed, and let's allow the future of education to become distanced online, and let's reduce the importance of campuses. Or we can say, no, the cost to students is too great. Let's not allow that to happen. Let's hold our ground, and when this pandemic is over, let's get people back in the classroom as soon as possible. Which of those two postures is yours? Fight to stay in a classroom or allow this to just take over?
I'll be honest. I've been in high school. My high school was an experimental STEM high school, so we kind of dabbled with a little bit of this already. So for me, I like being in the classroom because I'm a people person. I like to get to know the professor. I want to meet them, know them, try to connect with them like you do sometimes. Yeah. Like you do. You are a very person who wants to know what's going on in the moment. And that's kind of what I like to do when I'm in the classroom. I like to connect and I like to know everything I can. And then, but on this online, like online, certain things can be done online, like virtual courses of trainings and things like that, like that things that can be mass replicated. But for some things like accounting or advertising, you have to be very nuanced, and that content is possibly changing.
Right. Getting sterile.
For advertising, it can go up and down with how things go. Because, like, my course, I had an advertising course before, like, literally that happened, and then right at the stop, it happened. And basically, how everything's shifted, it's changed dramatically since the spring semester when it happened.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting.
It's crazy.
In a creative environment, online doesn't work as much. You know, the exchange of brains, the connection of eyes and physicality, and particularly in creative situations like that, you know, it becomes a real stifling factor, even in corporate environments. Ad agencies, by the way, I have friends, David, that are in the ad agency business. And, you know, we're doing creative meetings and sessions on Zoom calls, and it's not the same as locking ourselves in a conference room and having a brainstorming session. So there is a cost, and I think that cost weighs even a little heavier on the creative side. And I think you're right, buddy. So I wish you luck. Good luck down there. Let's hope we get you in the classroom really soon, Dave.
Yeah. And keep on doing your great work, sir. You're really inspirational to me, sir.
Thank you, Dave. Take care, buddy. I got to tell you, David's a lucky guy down at University of Tennessee. That's an amazing university to go to. What a cool place. Well, next is Hannah. Hannah is a preschool teacher, and I'm really dying to see how things are going in that world.
Hello?
Hannah, John Taffer here.
Holy shit, this is great.
How are you?
Hello?
Hi, John Taffer here. How are you, Hannah?
I'm good, how are you?
You're doing good. You got a couple of minutes?
Yeah, I do.
Where are you in Ohio?
Toledo, right on the border of Ohio, Michigan.
Sure, I know Toledo well. I used to actually spend a lot of time in Ohio years ago, and it's a great state. So you're a preschool teacher, and I find it interesting because we've been talking today in the podcast about distance learning and all my fears about distance learning and lack of socialization and connection. And, you know, I'm a little concerned that we as a country are so quick to throw away in-classroom learning and allow digital and distance learning to sort of take over. And I've been asking my listeners, and I'd love to ask you this question and talk about it for a moment, Hannah. If you had a choice of saying, okay, let's let social distancing and distant learning take over, and let's allow the digital world to develop our education in the future, or would you say, no, I'm fighting for the classroom. I don't believe that should happen. I don't believe that's progress. We need to keep kids in the classroom. Which two sides of that do you fall down on being a preschool teacher?
Definitely no. A lot of my students, they're three and they're four, some 5-year-olds. They don't know how to process emotions, let alone how could we expect them to work a computer or learn through a computer. And when we have our morning circle time, they can't, you know, I have their listening circles where they have to sit on, and I say it charges up the rest of the day. so that they can pay attention. I would never even fathom being able to teach preschool through a computer.
And it's interesting.
Especially for those who are on, like, IEPs or they have, you know, a learning disability or something like that. I don't think it's feasible.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I have a one-year-old grandson, and he's in preschool, and he just went from the infant room to the one-year room, right? Big deal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Traumatic change for this little guy.
Yeah.
And some kid bit his arm, not too bad, but bit his arm the other day. So now a kid takes a toy away from him a couple of days later, and now he bites the kid's arm because he learned it from the other kid. So now there's this issue where a child has to learn parameters, and they have to learn what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. And it's society who teaches us those things. You know, it's funny, honey, I look at my dog, and I have a new rescue dog who's been with us for about 6 months. And when he came into the house, he couldn't figure out anything. And he kept breaking all the rules. But my other dog straightened him out pretty quick. And you know, I think that society has a way of developing us and protecting us, nurturing and growing us. And I think we take that away when the kids aren't together. So I agree with you completely. So how is your situation at preschool now? Are all the students coming? Are you guys open?
Yes, we are open. We definitely, preschoolers do not have to wear masks per Ohio's current ordinance.
The kids don't?
No.
Right.
So, like, they have an after-school program for, like, school-age kids. They have to wear masks, but the younger ones do not.
We have to
wear masks at all times.
Yeah, and then you have you have serious sanitation rules. You're cleaning everything and wiping everything all the time.
Okay, we're cleaning everything. We have, it's called a Zona machine that we write down all of the toys that were used that day and they get run through the Zona, and it's like a giant sanitation machine.
Wow.
We have spray that we spray on all surfaces. They don't share crayons. They have their own pack of crayons.
Wow.
They cannot bring anything in from home. So they used to be able to bring like backpacks and they used to be able to like bring in their own toys and their own blankets and stuff for nap time, but they cannot bring anything in from home anymore. We provide everything.
So who helped your school put these programs in place? Because you have a private preschool, I'm guessing, right? That you work
it's a
for?
Private preschool.
And they only own that one school?
Yes.
So they're
it's
not
ran
a
through a
So they're not a big chain operation or nothing like that. Who helped them put all these programs in place? Do you know?
The local health department.
So they did. So the local health department was a resource for your school to provide these systems and procedures and such. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So have you found the state was really supportive during this process?
Kind of. With how much they're kind of changing everything, it can be hard to keep up. Especially since, obviously, whenever the governor does a press conference where he discusses schools and daycares and things like that, we don't find out anything beforehand, obviously. And, you know, we'll have parents come in at pickup time, and they'll be asking us 100 questions over what just happened, and we haven't even read the press report, or we haven't even received anything yet.
It's going
from,
so quickly.
You know, the governor. Yeah. So it's really, you know, we'll get bombarded.
I'll tell you, though, it's interesting is I live in Nevada, I live in Las Vegas, so I'm not involved in Ohio politics per se, and I don't know very much about it. But I've seen your governor a few times on national news, and I don't even know if he's a Democrat or Republican, to be honest with you, but I liked him a lot. You know, he did some videos from his living room in his home. He seemed warm. He seemed very caring. I liked him very much as far as he emulated a feeling of trust in me. Is he popular in Ohio?
Yeah, he is. This is his first term as governor. And I really think that obviously no one wishes COVID happen, but I think he really showed most of Ohio that he's fully capable of handling major issues like this and taking care of things. Because Ohio really kind of led the way for a lot of shutdowns and procedures and ordinances and things like that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I gave a speech at GOPAC, a political convention, last week, and I was talking about how this has changed so much because the science has changed so much, and we knew so little You know, yes to this, no to this, no to that, yes to this. I mean, it kept changing and changing. But it seems to me now that the science has leveled out and you know what procedures you're doing. So I want to ask you a really important question for our listeners. If I had a three-year-old, or if you had a three-year-old, your three-year-old little boy, the joy of your life, would you send him to preschool today?
Yes.
You would?
So, because I see what we're doing firsthand, and the, you know, I always put the safety and the health of my students before, and we're doing everything that we possibly can to keep our kids safe and to keep them healthy. And not only that, but to make sure that they're catching up on everything that they might have missed and learning a lot more.
Yeah, that's great to hear from you, Hannah. And it's great for our listeners to hear this. And this is my belief. Now, a larger school, a high school, we're talking a whole different animal here, right? With hundreds of kids in it and stuff. But the fact of the matter is your environment is safe. Preschools are safe across America. And I know this from other preschool operators I've spoken with. So you put our mind at ease, and you and I agree completely. Let's keep the classroom going. Let's not move these kids to computers.
Definitely.
Thanks, Hannah. Nice to talk to you. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you. You as well.
Bye-bye. Hannah, thank you. You know, that view is powerful. You know, you think teachers want to get out of the classroom and get into digital. They don't. They want to interact with their children. And here is obviously a teacher in Hannah who loves the kids, wants to interact with them, wants to watch them grow and learn. And we don't want that to disappear. Well, Kara is another school teacher, and Kara is in New Jersey.
Hello.
Hi, Kara. John Taffer here.
Hi, John Taffer.
How are you?
I'm very good.
I'm talking to a Jersey girl here, huh?
Yes, you are.
Where
are
you?
Born and bred.
Where are you in New Jersey?
Burlington. It's about 20 minutes from Philadelphia.
Sure. I know that area well. Mm-hmm. I used to spend a lot of time in Philadelphia, Cherry Hill, and used to go to Ocean Grove in the summertime every summer.
Oh, Ocean Grove. My mom grew up near, Manasquan. She graduated from Manasquan High School.
Ah, well, I love that area, the boardwalk. And if anybody's never been to that area, the Jersey Shore, boy, you really should do it, especially this time of year. It's beautiful there now. So, Kara, we've been talking today as a follow-up to my conversation with Dean Stowe Shoemaker, who is the dean at UNLV Hospitality School. And we were talking about the changes to education and all the things that are going on with distant learning and such. And I was eager to talk to you because you're a teacher. And what grade do you teach?
I teach English as a second language for kindergarten through sixth grade.
Okay, so you're teaching young children who obviously don't have the best of sanitation practices, right? Stick everything in their mouths and their ears, right?
Yes.
Of course.
Of course.
Don't have any comprehension of any of that. And we were talking about the whole premise of distance learning versus classroom learning, and I'm really worried about distance learning, Karen, and the impact it has on our children when we start to separate them and they live their lives monitoring screen time rather than time with other children and stuff. And question, and then I want to ask you about your thought on universal plan. As a teacher, as this moment in society, we have a choice. We're either going to allow digital and distance learning to take over because it's creeping into our lives more and more and more, or post-COVID, we're going to hold our ground and say, no, there's a place for digital learning, but we have to keep the classroom. Which of those two sides do you land on?
I agree. I think post-COVID, we're going to all say, like, no, we need to, the one-on-one is better than the screens and the distance learning, because kids need to learn how to be socialized.
I completely agree.
They need to learn how to act in public. Like, they can't go out and get a job unless they've been around people.
I agree. You know, it's interesting. I was telling the story a little earlier about I have a new dog, a new rescue dog in my house. And he came in the house. He didn't know any of the rules. We did everything wrong. But my other dog straightened him out real quick. I didn't have to. But children teach each other and they provide boundaries to each other. You learn to be funny, not when you're with your parents. Mm-hmm. You learn to be funny when you're with your kid, you're with your friends, right?
Yeah.
You learn to be a hero with your friends, not your parents. Right? You learn to be the great athlete or the great learner or the great speaker or the great this or the with your friends, not your parents. And I get really concerned that all of that peer recognition and all of that starts to disappear. And I'm with you, Kara. I think that we have to hold our ground and fight for classrooms when this is over. And let's get prepared, because I think we're all going to have that fight. Because budgets are going to be smaller, and they're going to say, oh, no, we can have less teachers, less classrooms, less facilities. Blah. And that's the fight I think we're going to have. So you had a concern that there's no universal plan now. What are you worried about? Talk to me.
Well, there's when we went out in March, we basically had 48 hours to put together a plan. And teachers are very resourceful. And we all bonded together. Like, I would be on calls with all my colleagues to figure out what to do. We had the screens. We gave out laptops. And we actually ran off packets for the kids that didn't have laptops or like hotspots or Wi-Fi, so we could cater to both. And we also had them come in and get food while they were out. We had cafeteria workers who would come in and do a pick and go. But so we had to throw this all together. So we thought the Department of Education would come together and make a plan for when September happens, because we saw the numbers in June and they weren't going down like we thought they were going to. But and said, well, it's up to the districts, and they threw them under the buses. And I feel really bad for my administrators and for my Board of Education, because they got like a, I think it was 100-some page document saying this is what you need to do.
Wow.
And we can't tell you how to do it. Go ahead and try.
It's interesting. So do you feel then that the state health department or whatever the resources have not been effective in providing you guys with at least a statewide plan that was executable?
Well, I think it's the Department of Education, because they basically said, like, the CDC guidelines, here you go. And we were like, a lot of this we can't do, because I work in a low-income district. And, you know, just getting laptops for kids were a big thing for us.
Yeah.
So we think they even hung the states out to dry.
So do you feel like it's getting better now? Do you feel like the resources are starting to come your way? And maybe there's a little light at the end of the tunnel, or are you not seeing that yet?
Well, what was really good is our governor came out and said, look, if you guys aren't comfortable or you think the schools aren't safe going back, you can do remote until we can make the school safe. So my district, we are doing a remote until October 13th. And then we're going to try the hybrid model, which divides the kids into cohorts, and they'll be in school for half a day for 2 days and then online for 3.
But I'm glad to hear that, because you're fighting to keep the classroom going is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to do it in a measured way, which makes perfect sense. So do you think that that's probably, and look, I'm asking you a big question now, because you're sitting in New Jersey. You're not looking at all of America. But do you sense that the kind of way you're going about it is the logical way that the nation should go about it?
I think so. I think remote until it's safer, like the HVAC systems is what I'm afraid of the most, with the air not circulating in there, with kids sitting there and being stagnant. That's what's nervous to me. I think if like we ease our way in and not like have kids in there for like 8 hours, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
And just seeing like how, because remember when we took them out in March, the numbers for kids, everyone's like, oh, it's low in kids. That's because we haven't put them in this situation.
Right. Now we're seeing the numbers go up because they're back in that situation. Yeah. Sure. I mean, the virus jumps from human to human. I'm not sure a kid is completely excluded from that process. And that's been proven.
Yeah.
So,
and I have a niece who's immune compromised because she's asthmatic. So it's scary. Like, am I going to be able to go see her? Because I don't know if I'll be carrying it.
Yeah. Well, that's the other problem with this. Whenever any of us go out, how do we go around other family members or other friends? So, you know, I find that I'm self-quarantining myself, then doing something for a day, then self-quarantine. So I get one day every 14 to do something. Because quarantine is such a part of our lives. So for those who have children that are listening right now, as a teacher, as one who's in the middle of this now, Kara, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Based upon the way that your school system is dealing with this and the way they've sort of got their arms around it and the procedures that they're putting in place and such, would you be comfortable sending your child to school? Let me rephrase that.
Hybrid,
your healthy child to school.
My healthy child, If they're healthy and they understand what's going on, I would be okay with the hybrid, not bringing them back full time, because I don't think that, but I would practice with them wearing masks around the house now. Yeah. I would send them into school wearing clothes that they can, like, when kids go to the bathroom, sometimes they can't unzip or zip up their pants and they need help. And we can't help them right now because we can't get 6 feet close to them. So just make sure they're trained before they go back. Yeah. If they were trained, and I would probably do the hybrid.
So what would you advise a parent? So should a parent go to the school? Should a parent call the school, talk to the school, ask questions? I know I would. If I had a young child who was going back to school, I would want to call that school and understand all the procedures that are in place, ask reasonable questions, know how I need to train my child to be prepared for this, et cetera. Is that the recommendation for all parents?
I highly suggest that. My brother and my sister-in-law, their son, my nephew, is going to kindergarten for the first time. And they went and they called the school and they asked some questions about, like, how the desks would be, if what's going on with the remote and everything else. And then they also got the name of his teacher and they called they emailed the teacher, and they've been talking back and forth to be introduced to the teacher, because a lot of these kids are going to teachers now that they don't know, because we didn't have time to, for them to meet them in the spring.
Sure.
But so we need just, first of all, be kind to the teachers because they're really stressed out right now. And just ask them any question you want. We're here to ask questions. And if the teachers can't answer your questions, the school or administrators, they will hop on it too.
Well, the great thing about questions and communication, and I think this is the best part of our conversation today, Tukarza, is this message. Parents need to be a part of this. Don't throw your kid on a bus or in a car and just let him go to school. Mm-hmm. Be a part of this. Understand what's going on. Prepare your child. The school is getting prepared. And make no mistake, that teacher is every bit as worried about their health as you are about your child's health. If ever I've seen America with a common interest, it's right now, Kara. None of us want to get sick. We all agree on that.
Yes, we all agree on that.
So if there's anything we should work together on, you'd think it would be that. Kara, thank you. This has been a great conversation. I wish you luck in this season and stay safe. And I bet you're a terrific teacher.
Thank you.
And I'm going to guess that you're greatly handicapped when you can't be in the same room with these kids who mean so much to you.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a hard time for you. Hang in there. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you'll be back soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Well, thanks, David. Thanks, Hannah. Thanks, Carrie. Those were good calls. You know, it's fascinating, Corey, to actually talk to the people who are in the thick of it.
Yeah.
You know, you watch the news, you hear things like, well, the teachers union is fighting. They don't want to go back to work. That's not true.
Yeah.
They want to go back to work in a safe kind of way. That was just proven to us when we're talking to teachers.
Yeah. That's their passion. That's what they do.
And then you hear, well, school systems aren't doing what they should to keep our kids safe. Of course they are.
Yeah.
They have kids too.
Right.
You know, we forget that the people that run our schools live in our communities. They shop in our stores. They have children too. Sometimes we forget, and dare I say it, I'm going to put my foot in my mouth, police officers live in our communities too. They're our neighbors. Their kids go to school with us. Because they put on a certain uniform doesn't categorize them in a certain way. So this is our community caring for our community. And I think a school is the essence of that. I learned a lot during this podcast. I hope you did too. Teachers but want to get back to the classroom. There's a logical, safe way of doing that. We talked about it today. Parents certainly want to get their kids back to school. Mm-hmm. They're ready to rip their freaking eyes out.
And even like David, you know. He wants to get back to class.
And as a college student, he wants to get back to class. So let's stay focused on how we get back to the classroom, not how we eliminate the classroom. And I think that's sort of where we started, Corey. So you know what's in my hand right now?
Oh, yeah. What you got?
I have a can of Taffer's Sparkling Craft Cocktail. And, you know, I happen to have 7 flavors.
Mm-hmm.
There happen to be 7 days in a week.
There is.
You get the connection here,
Corey? There is, yeah.
So I am now having a flavor a day. And I am forcing myself to have all 7 flavors every week. So now I am having, and I must say I haven't had this flavor in maybe 2 months, maybe since we even tested it, having a little California lime today.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to wind down this podcast, telling everybody the next few podcasts, I'm going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, opening up Taffer's Tavern in Alpharetta. It's opening in about 3 weeks or so. We sort of open quietly and soft because we're training everybody. We don't want huge crowds and such. But I am incredibly excited about Taffer's Tavern. Right now, I want to thank Sean Walker, Alan Walker, Adam, Gina, my whole team that's been working so hard on the opening of Taffer's Tavern. I want to thank Hemet, Seth out there in Alpharetta, who are franchisees that own that unit. Boy, is this exciting. If you're in the area, come check out Taffer's Tavern. If you're not in the area, boy, this California lime is pretty freaking good, I got to tell you.
Yeah, that one's refreshing.
Try some Taffer's Seltzer or some Taffer's Extra Spicy Bloody Mary Mitch, which is also pretty kick-ass. But you know what? At this time, let's remember, we're a community. And when a community supports each other, the community benefits from it. Yep. We had another police incident. Yep. It's another reason for people to get enraged. Yep. It's another reason for us to get divisive. Yep. It's another reason for us to have a political demonstration again. And yep, it's a reason for people to get angry and have problems. But as a community, we solve things. As a community, we grow. So let's remember our sense of community these next few weeks as we get past the primaries and all the divisiveness of the election. Let's hold our candidates accountable. Let's make certain they answer the questions of the press, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. Let's make sure they're held accountable. Let's make sure we know what their positions are. Let's make sure we know what we're getting. Let's hold our politicians and each other accountable to be a sense of a community these next few weeks. Because I got to tell you, buddy, when you're in a community that has a sense of community, there's nothing better than that. Talk to y'all next week. Take care. Bye.
Subscribe to the John Tapper Podcast right now for more episodes every Thursday.